Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, April 30th, 2025, on 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Okay, so what's going on with me? Now, I promised you that at some point I would talk about having gone to Chicago. So we went to Chicago. And when I got to Chicago, I was very, very tired, and I spent most of the first day resting and sleeping. So we didn't see a whole lot of Chicago, but it is very easy to walk around if you're in the city. You can use your GPS and you can go to different places. And because we were tired and we were focused on, you know, doing wedding stuff, mazel tov to my stepson, Greg, and his new wife, Amanda. So we had a very lovely time at the wedding. When you walk around Chicago, it's easy to do if you're walking at a close enough distance to get to somewhere. So we went and we got food. We found a restaurant called Ima's, which means mommy in Hebrew, and so it had Mediterranean food, and I got food there 2 days in a row. I didn't wind up going to the rehearsal dinner because we wanted Greg and Amanda to have some time with their very immediate relatives. So I stayed behind, got more rest, which was really nice. We found a terrific chocolate shop called Burdick's, and I had 3 days in a row, I had really thick, delicious hot chocolate. So I'm kind of off that for a bit. And we brought home some gourmet chocolate, and that was exciting too. We got to see the river in Chicago, the one that they turned green, which still looked a little bit green from St. Patrick's Day, which wasn't that long. It was only, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And we did see the hands-off protest, and that was happening at Daly Square, which was walking distance from where we were. So we did see that, and we saw a lot of signs, and that was kind of interesting, too. A good time was had by all, and I got to know a little bit, a very tiny bit, of a city that I didn't know very much about. I had been there, the last time I was there and walked around was 1991, and so this is many, many years later. So we got around by foot and by Uber and by bus and by train, and it was kind of exciting. We're safely home, and that's nice, and we're very happy for my stepson, Ron's son, and his new wife, and we got to see a lot of family, which Ron's family, of course, and meet Greg's friends and Amanda's friends, and that was lovely. And they had the wedding in the warehouse district, in an old loft that had a lot of antique-y stuff that you could, that was for sale. But it was a really interesting venue. And the vows were very lovely. They wore these cool, dramatic masks, not the kind that protect you from illness, the kind that go over your eyes for dramatic effect. And when they did the ceremony, they took the masks off, and that was really cool. So, and then they had dancing, you know, they had a DJ, and they had dancing to some stuff from our era, a lot of stuff from later eras. And I think every wedding I have been to in the last little while, they always play Loom by Imagine Dragons. So that was fun. And there are a few songs that were just, you know, surprisingly poppy that we heard. We danced to the Macarena. That was the only line dance we did. We did the Macarena, and surprisingly, I know the Macarena, so I was able to do the Macarena the whole way through. That was kind of cool. And we danced to Rock Lobster, and that was fine. And so you know, we danced and had fun and ate great food. The other thing they did was they had street food. They had Chicago street food, and that was the dinner. So they had little things of ramen, little mini street hot dogs, little mini street tacos. And I impressed the Mexican guy serving the tacos by saying, "I want asada," and because I said it right. That was kind of cool. And they had amazing charcuterie. They had the best capicole that I have ever tasted in my life in Chicago. So that was exciting. Really terrific charcuterie. There were special cocktails that were the groom's choice and the bride's choice. And the bride's choice had bourbon in it, so it was wasted on me. I didn't have it. And so I had the groom's choice that had sweet vermouth and some other interesting liqueur in it. So I had that. And it was fun. So it was really nice. And so so great time was had by all. It was tiring to travel, and I had to recover from traveling. I'm feeling a little bit better fatigue-wise after I'm done making this show. I hope to get some rest today, so that will be nice, and then have an easier time getting through to the weekend. So it's what we're getting into spring, and you're listening to this at the end of April, so hopefully we've gotten some nicer weather. And earlier in April, we had a couple days where we had a few snowflakes fall, and it's going to get down to the 20s tonight, the day that I'm recording this. So still a little cold, and I saw a very funny cartoon where it says, here's what you wear in the spring. Monday, person's in a winter coat and a scarf. Tuesday, shorts and a tank top. Wednesday, long sleeve shirt and light pants. Thursday, a parka. Friday, a wool dress. Saturday, shorts and a tank top. It's hilarious. It really does go up and down like that in the spring in New England. That's just what it does. All right, so let's talk about some health stuff now. One of the health things I wanted to talk about was I just wanted to review electrolytes again because I had a patient come in not too long ago. He said he wasn't feeling well. He was feeling a little off and a little bit woozy, and he didn't understand why. And then that day he found that he drank some water and he felt a bit better. And I said, okay, as soon as you feel like that, if you feel a little off for no explanation and it's not dire, like you're not in extreme pain, like if you have extreme abdominal pain, if it's really bad and it doesn't go away, it's an ER visit. If you have extreme chest pain and you don't know why and it doesn't go away, it's an ER visit. But if you're just feeling a little off and a little lightheaded, like you feel dizzy-ish, the first thing you should try is to drink water, and it's a good idea to have electrolytes in the water. So let's review the different kinds of electrolyte drinks. The first kind of electrolyte drink you can get is you can buy pre-mixed electrolytes, like just bottles of water at the convenience store and at the supermarket that have some electrolytes in it, and there's no taste. It's just water and happens to have extra electrolytes. So you can keep those around, and you might feel better when you drink them. You can also keep coconut water in the house. If you're dehydrated and you swig on some coconut water, you're probably going to feel better right away. Not everybody likes the taste of coconut water, which is just fine. And you can buy electrolytes anywhere now. They have them in the supermarket. You can order them online. They have them in sporting goods stores. They have them at your local drug stores. And so they're different variations and different qualities. So I happened to look at the electrolytes in the supermarket, and I noticed the ones that I saw. You have your choice of, like, there are drinks that have a lot of sugar in them that are basically, you know, fake juice with a lot of sugar and also electrolytes. They will make you feel better. And if you are somewhere where that's all there is and you feel that lightheaded sensation, it's okay to get that because you will feel better. I don't think it's good to drink that all the time. And in fact, back in the Iraq War days, people were drinking so much electrolyte water, so much, you know, commercial electrolyte with lots of sugar in it, that they were getting kidney stones. And that's something that can happen if you drink that kind of electrolyte water. But if you drink lighter electrolytes, one of the things you have to be careful is when you drink fluid, if you can taste carbohydrate in the fluid, whether it's real sweetener or not, you're more likely to drink it, and that has been studied. So when you go to the supermarket, one of the things you can do is you can get electrolytes. Some of the electrolytes are sweetened with artificial sweeteners. So I was checking out what I could get at the supermarket. It was either too much sugar or it had artificial sweetener in it. So I don't like to take electrolyte. I don't like to consume sucralose. If I'm going to have something that's sweet but not sugar, I prefer to have stevia or monk fruit or either or. So I have, that's the electrolytes that I use. My advice is, unless there's nothing else available, if it's a matter of being dizzy versus staying away from fake sweetener, I would say go ahead and take the electrolyte with the fake sweetener because you're going to feel better. Just don't have it all the time. But if you, for everyday use, try to stay away from the fake sweetener. So you can get, as I said, you can get pre-mixed electrolyte that, you know, just in bottles that's already electrolyte. You can also get electrolyte drops that have no flavoring in them. They're basically seawater, and sometimes they'll have mixed concentrated trace minerals. And that's a great thing to get. And there's various brands of those. And you can put them in your water if you don't mind the taste of that. It's going to taste a little bit salty. And you can drink it just like that. If you'd like to have those, but flavor it with something sweet, you can put your own fruit in it. You can squeeze lemon or lime into it. You can add other fruit. You can add ginger or dill or rosemary. You can put anything in the water that you would like it to taste. Or you can do a splash of your favorite fruit juice, whatever that is. The easiest electrolyte is you don't have to buy special electrolyte. You do a pinch of good quality salt, like salt from Utah, Redmond salt, or Himalayan or Celtic salt. Pinch of salt in a glass of water, splash of fruit juice, you've got yourself electrolyte water, because you're going to get the potassium from the juice and you're going to get the salt from the water, from the salt that you just put into it. And remember that salt and sugar help you to absorb water faster than water by itself. So if you are feeling light, you don't have to drink electrolyte water all the time. If you're merely thirsty, you can drink plain water and it's fine. But if you get to the point where you're a little lightheaded, or say you're on a blood pressure med, I know my blood pressure med makes me go to the bathroom more. So I feel better if I have electrolyte water on board. So most of my drink has electrolyte in it. I don't generally do the electrolytes that just sea salt. Either I drink plain water or I get the electrolyte that tastes like something. So the electrolyte to look for everyday use is going to be one that doesn't necessarily have sweetener in it, but it does have, mine has stevia in it, and then it has a light amount of electrolytes in it. And I put a little scoop in my water and it doesn't taste overwhelming. It's not nearly as strong as that stuff you get from the convenience store, because there's no sugar in it, and it's only lightly flavored and it's lightly sweetened. And that's great for everyday use. Like if you needed to drink that all day, you could do that. And the other thing to do is the electrolytes that have no flavoring in them, that's just basically sea salt and trace minerals. And that's a great way to go. But do beware when you go to the supermarket, when you order electrolytes online, they might have artificial sweeteners like sucralose, acesulfame K, other artificials. Sometimes there's even NutraSweet in them, or an aspartame in them. So I would avoid those, because those aren't good for you. Sucralose, we're concerned about what it can do to your liver, and aspartame can have neurological issues. Acesulfame K, I'm not so sure, but it's another artificial sweetener. There's no reason to consume it. It's a good idea to, if you're feeling off and a little woozy, water with electrolyte, try it before you start thinking about calling the doctor and wondering what the heck is wrong with you. Try drinking water with electrolytes in it. And it can be as simple as a pinch of salt, whatever salt you have in the house, and a splash of fruit juice, or you can keep electrolytes on hand. Now, personally, when I am working out, I use a heavier electrolyte. It's got more stuff in it. The electrolyte's going to have higher levels of various minerals in it, like magnesium, calcium, potassium, sodium. It's going to have more intense flavor to it, and it's going to have a higher level of salt than the everyday electrolytes are going to have. And then it might have other things in it. It might have some B vitamins in it. It might have some kind of some easily absorbable sugar in it. And that's, so if you're actively working out and you're working out hard, like where you're going to get very sweaty, then that's the kind of electrolyte you look for. And again, you don't have to get that stuff from the grocery store that's really, really sugary. There are electrolyte blends that have a reasonable amount of sweetener in them, that have real fruit flavoring in them and have real colors in them, and then have some B vitamins and magnesium and calcium and sodium and stuff like that. So I have a different brand that I use for working out than I use for everyday use. I've tried to use the everyday one while working out, and it was okay. I just put a little bit more in, but it's not as heavy as, like, I need more intensity for when I'm working out to the point of sweating and where I'm wanting to prevent muscle cramps and, you know, keep my hydration up. So that was one thing that was on my mind because it came to my attention yesterday. All right. So now there's some, let me tell you about what's going on with Ron's health, and Ron will get to tell you about that at some point. We may talk about it in a couple of, I'm going to do a couple of shows without him because of scheduling, but the next time I talk to him, we'll talk to him about what we found out. But he had his MRI done. He had an MRI of his neck and his lumbar spine. So without getting into it too much, he has severe stenosis in his neck. And that's probably what's been going on all along. If you have stenosis, so it's because he has arthritis, he has disc degeneration, and he has vertebrae that are sitting on his discs. And he has stenosis. So stenosis means that the movement of the discs, the flattening of the disc and the degeneration of the disc make it so that the vertebrae don't sit properly upon each other in line in his neck, and they crowd out the spine. So there's pressure on his spinal column in his neck. So what can happen when you have pressure on your spinal column? Well, you're going to get misfiring signals all the way down, and that starting from where it is in the neck all the way down to the rest of your body. So he has compromise. He gets cramping and compromised, and he has carpal tunnel in both hands, or he has, you know, nerve impingement in both hands, and then he has impingement all the way down, and he does have some serious degeneration in his lumbar spine as well, and he has some retrolisthesis of a couple of vertebrae, I believe, in the lumbar spine. Retrolisthesis means that the upper vertebra is sitting back. It's not stacked normally on top of the vertebra below it. It's shifted to the back. And so when it's shifted to the back like that, it's not going to sit properly. It's going to do some compression on the disc and may crowd out the spine as well. I don't know that he has any stenosis in the lumbar spine, but he does have some foraminal impingement. So the foramen is where the nerve comes out to go and feed the rest of the body. So he has some impingement there. So that would explain why he's getting the issues with his legs. So we're not sure what the next step is. It's possibly surgery, but we don't know. So it's really marked in his neck. He has a lot of stenosis in his neck, and then he has some impingement in his lumbar spine as well. So he has to go back to the neurologist, and they'll talk about what next steps are, and we'll see what they are. In the meantime, continuing to ice and continuing to get, he hasn't gotten acupuncture, which he could, but he is continuing to get chiropractic. Those things can still be helpful because they can at least help to create some alignment. You said it, Craig. Craig says, ouch. Anyway, if you want to comment on what I'm saying, please feel free to comment on the Facebook Live, and I will respond to you, as you can see. So I feel kind of bad because if this is what was going on all along, I didn't think to tell him to go get an x-ray a year ago and then get an MRI, but now I know. And then I had a patient come in not too long ago who had somewhat, not exactly the same, but somewhat similar symptoms. And I sent him right, worked on a bunch of things with the fella, but I sent him right to the neurologist. I said, you're going to wind up needing x-rays. You're going to wind up needing an MRI, and you should probably get an EMG. And then you'll figure out if there's some impingement and that's what's going on with your symptoms. So that was pretty interesting. All right, so the next thing I want to talk about is some things that were in the news. One was that about Utah banning fluoride in their water supply. So let's see. So this came from NBC News, and it says that Utah became the first U.S. state to ban fluoride in public water systems. Their governor, Spencer Cox, who's a Republican, signed a bill into law that prohibits any person or government entity from adding the mineral, which can prevent tooth decay, to water systems in the state. The bill was introduced in January and then passed in the Senate on February 21st, 2025. Will go into effect on the 7th of May, 2025. That was the final, Cox signing it was the final step needed for the ban. Although he says he doesn't care that much about the bill. I don't know why he would say that. As of 2022, about 44% of Utah's population was receiving fluoridated water, one of the lowest percentages in the country, according to the CDC. you think you would see drastically different outcomes with half the state not getting it and half the state getting it. I've talked to a lot of dentists and we haven't seen that, Cox told ABC. So it's got to be a really high bar for me if we're going to require people to be medicated by their government. Very interesting. Major medical associations and public health groups, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, American Dental Association, and the CDC, support adding fluoride to drinking water on the grounds that it helps prevent cavities. But Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy has criticized fluoridation, associating it with illnesses like bone cancer and thyroid disease, despite scientists saying there's not enough evidence to support a link. Kennedy said before the presidential election that if he was elected, Trump would recommend removing fluoride from all water systems. Dr. Marty McCarry, who the Senate confirmed to lead the Food and Drug Administration, suggested at that time in early November that adding fluoride to drinking water was potentially harmful, a claim that most public health experts reject. Some studies have suggested that fluoride may negatively impact children's neurodevelopment, including one recently published in the Journal of JAMA Pediatrics, which found an association between higher fluoride exposure and lower IQ scores in children. According to the authors, though, most of the 74 studies they reviewed were from countries that use far higher levels of fluoride in the water than the U.S. does. A study out of Australia found no link between children drinking fluoridated water and negative cognitive development, and there was a 2018 study finding that a greater availability of fluoridated water in a county was associated with fewer cavities among children. According to the CDC, the only documented health risks of fluoridation are cosmetic issues such as discolored tooth enamel and small holes in the teeth. So, still, the push to remove fluoride from drinking water has gained popularity across the country. More than 150 towns or counties have voted to do so since 2010, according to the Fluoride Action Network, which is an anti-fluoride group. And lawmakers in Kentucky, Montana, and Tennessee have filed bills to make fluoridation optional for water systems or prevent the mineral from being added to systems altogether. And in Florida, a bill proposed the current legislative sessions aims to ban additives, including fluoride, from drinking water. So the issue is, if you talk to my dentist says that fluoride in drinking water does prevent cavities. And if you have locations where people aren't real good about brushing their teeth or children aren't real good about brushing their teeth, when there's fluoride in the water, there are fewer cavities. She says that that has been studied. And the truth is, and you've heard me talk about this before, but the fact is that fluoride does prevent cavities. It doesn't. Is it really good for you? That's a good question. Does it really cause cognitive issues? Is there potential toxicity? Probably. But if you use it in small amounts on your teeth, it probably does help to prevent cavities. The mechanism is, you know, how the calcium, what's in your teeth, that's what's in your teeth that helps to form the structure of the enamel is calcium hydroxyapatite. That's what's in your teeth. So when you put fluoride into your mouth, into your saliva, and you add it to your enamel, you create fluoroapatite. And fluoroapatite will plug up holes in the enamel on your tooth surface. So it definitely does plug up those holes and it does prevent bacteria from getting in and prevent cavities. Is it good for you altogether? That's questionable. And this is why my preference is calcium hydroxyapatite. If there's a question and there's something that could be as good or better, why not use that? So calcium, but the thing is, people don't do that either. So if they're not doing anything and they are, and the thing is, Weston Price did all those studies on people in Africa who had fantastic teeth and ate a paleo diet. They didn't eat any sugar. They didn't eat any starchy foods. And they didn't, and they had terrific teeth. So the reason we get cavities is mostly because we eat badly. We eat starch and sugar. We drink alcohol. And we drink soda. We consume things. We consume a lot of acidic foods. You know, if you eat too much fruit, even that can be an issue. If you drink a lot of fruit juice, even more. Coffee and tea are acidic, and they can help. They can take off the minerals in your teeth. So if you're eating a paleo diet where you don't have any of these super acidic things and in your diet, and you're not eating a lot of sugar because sugar feeds the bacteria, it feeds your strep mutans, which gives you more cavities, you're going to be less likely to get cavities. So we have to, because people don't stop eating sugar and drinking coffee and consuming the things that help to wreck your tooth enamel, you have to have something to combat that. So that's why you have to brush your teeth, and you have to brush your teeth with minerals, and then you have to put the minerals back. Because if you're eating acidic things, and also if you genetically don't have great enamel, you have to replace that enamel. So my preference is calcium hydroxyapatite. And you can get calcium hydroxyapatite in toothpaste at the drugstore, at the supermarket, online. You can also get special probiotics that that you can take lozenges, and you can get toothpaste that have dental-friendly probiotic in them. And they will combat the strep mutans in your mouth. And so if you apply those every day, you might have a better chance of not getting cavities. And I use a special toothpaste that has silver and grapeseed and calcium hydroxyapatite and CoQ10 for your gums. And it has, so it has all those things. And I don't use it to brush my teeth. I use it as a leave-on. So after I'm done brushing my teeth, I use something else to brush my teeth. The toothpaste I'm using right now has inulin in it. So the inulin is a prebiotic that's going to help feed the good bacteria in my mouth. And then when I'm done, completely done brushing my teeth, then I take a little bit of the special toothpaste with all the stuff in it, the probiotic and the calcium hydroxyapatite, and there might be a little spirulina, there's some silver in it. And I put that, I rub that on the surfaces of my teeth, and I leave it on, and then I don't ingest anything for at least half an hour. The best time to put that kind of thing on is when you go to bed, because it's going to sit there all night, and you're going to, you know, you probably have a good drink before you put it on, a drink of water, and then apply the toothpaste, and then hopefully you'll go to sleep, and it's going to sit there for a few hours doing its job before the next time you wake up and have to have some water. So that's helpful too. So it's very interesting that this is a movement that they're going to be taking fluoride out of drinking water. Are we going to see more cavities in general? I am afraid that in places where there's not great education, there's that people are in poverty, that where people don't have great education or great resources in terms of food, where people eat too much starch and sugar, and that we're going to see an uptick in cavities because of the lack of fluoride in the water. Because say what you will, yes, it's true that there might be, ultimately the studies are equivocal as to whether fluoride actually causes cognitive issues, because some studies say yay and some studies say nay. But fluoride, when applied to teeth, creates fluoroapatite, and it does plug up holes where bacteria can get in, and it makes you less likely to get cavities. There's nothing you could do about it. Even if you are, you know, in love with Robert F. Kennedy, it's still true. You can't undo that science. Fluoride creates fluoroapatite, and it will attach to your enamel and help to prevent cavities. But calcium hydroxyapatite does the same thing, and you can apply calcium hydroxyapatite to your teeth. And with the calcium hydroxyapatite, that's what your teeth are made of anyway, and there's no potential toxicity. It's not going to give you, there's no studies that show that calcium hydroxyapatite or calcium, ingesting calcium in any form, is going to give you problems. In fact, you need to have adequate calcium for so many things in your body. It helps to build your bones, and you're always remodeling your bone. You're not remodeling your teeth. The teeth are what you got. And so when you break down your teeth, they're broken down. So you're just trying to, you know, rebuild some of the enamel with exogenous calcium hydroxyapatite, but the structure of the teeth, they are what they are. Bone that you use, the bones of your skeleton, when you move them around, they can build up and break down. And they're always in a process of breaking down and remodeling. And you have buffers in your blood. You have calcium buffers in your blood. And the calcium comes from your bones. So your bones are actually always in a state of flux, because you need calcium to buffer your blood so that you can keep out of metabolic alkalosis and acidosis. That's what it's for. Craig is asking about calcium carbonate, and no, calcium carbonate is not something I would use to help with with tooth enamel. It's not the form that's in your mouth. When you use calcium hydroxyapatite is the form of calcium. It's bonded to this hydroxyapatite mineral complex. That's what's in your teeth, and that's also what's in your bones. When I have women come in with osteoporosis, I also give them calcium hydroxyapatite pills to take, hoping that their bones will take it up and help. It'll be one of the things to help to strengthen their bones. So anyway, we're going to see what happens here. It's a little concerning because my main concern is in places where there's not a lot of good nutrition and there's not a lot of good education and there's not a lot of good resources. If they take the fluoride out of the water, you are going to see more cavities in children and more tooth decay in the populations there. But what Utah is pointing out is that only 44% of the communities in Utah were fluoridated, and they weren't seeing much of a difference in the rate of cavities in the parts that were fluoridated versus the parts that were not. So the governor thought that it would be okay to take the fluoride out of the water supply. So Craig is asking for a brand name on the hydroxyapatite. I cannot say that on the air because this is a community radio show. What I can do is, if I remember, I will send a message or put it in the comments. Anyway, so that was interesting that's something that happened in the news. Okay, interesting about me and my health. When I went to Chicago, I decided to take a break from my lime herbs. When I got there, I was feeling absolutely exhausted, and I have been wondering if the lime herbs were actually bothering me in some way. And I don't know how much of it was the herbs and how much of it was the modified citrus pectin. And if I continue to not take my lime herbs and then go see my naturopath, she's not going to be thrilled. I do have scheduled in the month of May to get checked for my co-infections to see if my co-infections are still popping up. And if they are, then I'll continue to take my herbs. What are you going to do? But I'm taking a break. I haven't taken them in about a week now. And I noticed some things. I'm not sure about my energy. I'm still struggling with energy. Of course, I traveled and then I had to go back to work and be very busy. I'm not feeling too bad today, which is good. But I noticed that my digestive system is functioning better, I'm a bit more regular. I have a better appetite, and I think I was having some heartburn. Heartburn is gone. And like I said, my appetite is better and my digestion is generally better. The other thing that's better is my sleep. I think I was waking up a lot, and I don't know how much of it was waking up to use the bathroom. I was going to the bathroom a lot more. I was going to, you know, use the, my kidneys were functioning in excess. So it was really pushing fluid through my kidneys. So I was having to use the bathroom a lot during the day and during the night. And I found that I'm sleeping more hours without having to go to the bathroom. And I don't have as much urgency, and I don't have as much, I had some a little bit of urinary irritation. And that has improved as well. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do, if I'm going to stay off the herbs for a while and see if I continue to feel better and see if I continue to not have symptoms. I did have a round of tremors before I went to just one night, but it was a round of tremors before I went to Chicago, and it was only for one night. So, and then when I got to Chicago, I just didn't feel like taking the herbs, and so I didn't. And so I've continued to not take them, and I'm going to see what happens. If I get to a point where I'm like, you know what, I'm feeling a bit symptomatic, I'll start taking them again. That's the thing, you can take them. And so if I get to this weekend and my energy has improved and I'm feeling overall better, I may stay off them for a while, and then I'll just chat with my naturopath about it when I get to see her. So that's what's going on there. And what I'm hoping is that when I get tested, that the co-infections will have abated. And if I have to take anything, it'll just be the herbs to focus on the Lyme disease, and that's it. So I am going to continue taking the herb kudzu, because kudzu is just it's helpful for neurological issues. And, you know, I certainly had neurological issues post-vaccine. So So I'm going to continue to take that. And I have neuro, because I have some compromise in my lumbar spine that's compromising the communication with the nerves in my legs. So anything that helps my nerves is going to be helpful. And I'm still going to take the other things that I'm taking, that so quercetin and N-acetylcysteine, phosphatidylserine and fish oil. The herbs I'm going to take, I'm going to continue to take rhodiola. I'm going to continue to take kudzu. I'm going to continue to take motherwort, which is a great herb for calming the nervous system as well as keeping heart rhythm regular. And heart rhythm is something that gets affected when you have Lyme disease. And I'm going to keep drinking water with electrolytes, as you can see. So that's what's going on. We'll keep you posted and see what happens there. All right. Now, the next thing, and then I had a conversation with a patient who's a couple years older than me, and I was talking to her about how, how I struggle with fatigue. And she told me that in the last few years of working, since she's already retired, her last few years of working, she struggled with fatigue and anxiety and sleep. And it was so hard to get through days because she was so exhausted. And I think this is something that happens when you get into your 60s and you're forced to continue to work at a level that's not good for your body, that this is something that happens, because as you get older, you just need more rest. You need more time to sleep. You need naps. When you exert yourself, it's not that you can't exert yourself. You certainly can. But you need to rest. You need to recover from that. You don't recover as well or as quickly when you get to be my age, and I'm 61 years old. And so I'm probably going to start step by step cutting back on hours so I can get more rest. And it's not because I want to. I don't mind doing the work that I'm actually doing now. It's just that I get so exhausted and I have to spend so much time recovering. Like on days that I'm not working, I can't plan a lot because I have to rest. And, I'm somebody who likes to ride my bike and I want to be able to do that. And I need a good work-life balance. And working 10-hour days, I don't think is a good work-life balance, but I'm going to make it so that in the course of my workday, I'm able to take naps, and I'm going to see a slightly fewer patients, and we're going to start later on Friday. So that's what we're going to do. So I'm excited about that because, little things to help me enjoy my life more is great. Right now, if you're looking at me on Facebook Live, you can see that I'm wearing, or on YouTube, I'm wearing this cute shirt that has a dandelion on it. And the dandelion is made of animal paws, of dog or cat paws. And then the wind has blown some of the dandelion seeds off, and their little paws attached to the stalk is very cute. So that's something that made me kind of happy. So I wanted to bring that up. All right, now here's something else that I found that's interesting in the news, and that's that sugar is ADHD kryptonite. Wow. So remember, kryptonite was the Krypton is an inert element. So neon, argon, krypton, I think helium is the first one. They're all the inert elements. They can't really react with anything because they have complete the same number of protons and electrons. So they're inert. They don't react with other elements. Anyway, so kryptonite for Superman the superhero, he was from the planet Krypton, but for some reason, when he was not on Krypton, if you presented him with some kryptonite, which is apparently a mineral, it would take away his powers. So when you say something is kryptonite to somebody, you're saying that it takes away their power and makes them not feel well in some way. So what's an ADHD diet? So if you follow a diet for ADHD that has has a lot of protein and vitamins, it can help control your symptoms of ADHD. But you have to avoid sugar, artificial flavors, and common allergens as well. So deficiencies in certain types of foods can worsen your symptoms of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in both children and adults. The good news that if you eat a diet that boasts adequate levels of the right foods, it will help to optimize your brain function. So if you eat foods that are rich in protein, like, and you know, whatever protein works for you is going to be helpful for you. So I am not anti-beef. I believe if you can digest, I don't eat a lot of beef because I don't digest it well. But sometimes I do eat a little bit of beef. I had the asada at the wedding. And as long as the beef, if I'm having beef in my everyday life, it's better if it's grass-fed and finished. Otherwise, I'm not gonna buy it for home, but I might have a few bites at the wedding, which is what I did. Same with pork. I don't have pork. We don't have pork chops. We don't have, you know, generally have pork. Although we do buy some healthy sausage, and sometimes the sausage is pork. But most of the time we don't. Like if we get andouille sausage for our jambalaya, it's turkey, made from turkey or chicken. But anyway. For high protein foods, lean beef, pork, poultry, as long as they're grass-fed, free-range, organic, they don't have chemicals in them. Fish, as long as it's wild-caught or raised cleanly. Eggs, as long as they're free-range and fed well. Beans, nuts, soy, if you tolerate it, and dairy products, again, if you tolerate them. If you don't tolerate dairy, dairy is a common food intolerance, and casein and whey are common food intolerances. So it's not, dairy is not necessarily going to be good for you, but for some people it is. So if you eat whole foods, it can have beneficial effects on ADHD symptoms, and this has been studied. Protein-rich foods are used by the body to make neurotransmitters, which are the chemicals that your brain releases to communicate with each other. Some of them, like dopamine, are essential for maintaining attention and focus. And dopamine is the big one. That's the big one that helps you to feel pleasure, that helps you to feel attention, and it helps people who have ADHD to do their focus thing. The body makes brain-awakening neurotransmitters when you eat protein. It's a good idea to start your day with a breakfast that has protein in it. Laura Stevens, who's a nutritionist, said this, and she wrote 12 effective ways to help your ADD/ADHD child. Don't stop there. Look for ways to slip in lean protein during the day as well. So you're just going to feel better overall if you're eating protein at most of your meals. You can try nuts, lean meats, protein bars, fruit smoothies, and I'm a believer in finding healthy jerky and meat sticks. As long as they don't have nitrates in them and they're cleanly raised and organic. There's a lot of brands out there. I like having those around because they're easy, quick protein. And I keep my staff in what we call our emergency protein. And we used to keep emergency chocolate on hand, but they would just go through it so fast. They said, please stop buying it for us. And I said, I want to be able to get you a snack. And we finally settled on jerky and meat sticks. So I've been getting a really good brand, and I keep it stocked. And they don't eat it as fast. So if they have one meat stick, that they might have one meat stick a day or less, and they don't necessarily have it every day. So we don't go through them as fast. So that's nice too. It saves me a little money. And, you know, it's a great way to get some easy protein in if you're flagging late in the afternoon. And you don't have to cook something. You can just reach for it. If you're in a situation where it's hard for you to cook things, or, you know, you're at work and you want to have some snacks in your desk, I think meat sticks and jerky are a great thing to have as long as you tolerate them. People with histamine issues might not tolerate them as well. So Faye Berger Mitchell, who's a registered dietitian from Bethesda, Maryland, her daughter had an ADHD diagnosis, and her daughter does take stimulants to control the symptoms, but a pill is not enough. Eating a well-balanced diet that includes vegetables, complex carbohydrates, fruits, and plenty of protein will help anyone with ADHD issues to be a lot more balanced and have their behavior more balanced and have their cognition work well. And Ned Halliwell, who founded the Halliwell Center for Cognition and Emotional Health in Sudbury, Mass. And in New York, advises all patients with ADHD to think about their plate when preparing a meal. Half of the plate, he recommends, should be filled with fruits or vegetables, 1/4 with protein and 1/4 with carbohydrates. He also recommends having several servings of whole grains, which are rich in fiber, each day to prevent blood sugar levels from spiking and then plummeting. And I think the protein is more important for that. And if you're going to eat whole grains, you shouldn't like eat a ton of them. That you have a little bit of them to put your lots of protein and vegetables on top of. And I'm a fan of quinoa. If you want to do brown rice, you can, but I think quinoa is better because it's a pseudo grain and it's less likely to be irritating and it's not going to raise your blood sugar as much. And then vitamins and minerals can be helpful, of course. You can help with parents who have children of ADHD in behavior modification and classroom interventions. Stimulant medications can be effective, and if you combine them with psychosocial treatment, it can be really helpful. And then there's also vitamins and minerals that can be helpful. Many diets are deficient in key vitamins, minerals, and fats that may improve attention. So remember that you want to have zinc, iron, and magnesium in an ADHD diet. Zinc regulates dopamine and may make methylphenidate, which is Ritalin, may make it more effective by improving the brain's response to dopamine. If you're low in zinc, it correlates with inattention. You also need iron for making dopamine. And women in their childbearing years, when they menstruate, might, depending on how heavy their flow is, might be low in iron, depending how much they replace it with foods that contain iron. And the other thing is, when you get older, you don't absorb iron as well. So I actually take an iron supplement every day, just a little bit, only like 27 milligrams. But I take an iron supplement every day because my ferritin runs a little on the lower side. And so I take zinc as well. Iron and zinc are going to help me have more dopamine. So one of the things I'm very blessed with is all the Lyme stuff that I have had. I really, even when I'm absolutely exhausted, my brain still works. I feel very fortunate about that. And then there's magnesium. I also take magnesium. It's used to make neurotransmitters. It's involved in attention and concentration. And research shows that adding magnesium supplements can decrease some symptoms of ADHD and aid in relaxation. And when I offer magnesium, I will often offer either magnesium glycinate, which is attached to glycine, which is a calming mineral, or I recommend magnesium L-threonate. Because threonine is something that your brain uses a lot of, and the magnesium L-threonate will help the magnesium to get into the brain more easily. And so it will help to regulate neurotransmitters better. Serotonin in particular is regulated by magnesium and vitamin B6. So you want to make sure that you have adequate serotonin on board, because that's going to help with all kinds of things, with appetite, with sleep, with cognition, with pain tolerance, with just pleasure in general, just feeling good. So diet is the safest way to increase these minerals, but you can also get multivitamins and minerals that have zinc and iron in them. And you should make sure you talk to your doctor or somebody who's who knows how to regulate and prescribe amounts of vitamins and minerals. Don't forget B vitamins as well. As I said, vitamin B6 is crucial for creating neurotransmitters that regulate your emotions, like serotonin and dopamine. And B6 tends to raise your brain's level of dopamine. And I also take some B6, and I take it in the activated form, which is pyridoxal 5-phosphate. So I don't take it every day. I take it every other day. I take it every other day, or 3 to 4 times a week. That's when I take the vitamin B6. And B6 can also decrease anxiety. So you're going to find B6 in wild-caught tuna, in bananas, spinach, and salmon. So you can take a multivitamin in your ADHD diet, especially if your child is a picky eater or you're a picky eater. If they eat too much takeout food, chips, and soda, they're not getting their regular daily value of vitamins. So give them a multivitamin. And there are various brands that are going to make your kid happy, often in gummy form, in chewable form. And if they're able to swallow pills, you can get those too. But gummies, I always have issues with gummies because on the one hand, gummies are fun and they taste good and they make you more likely to want to consume the vitamin or mineral, whatever supplement you're taking. But on the other hand, you have to make the gummy, so it doesn't fit all the vitamins and minerals that you want. You're going to be able to fit your vitamins and minerals more readily into a capsule or a tablet. But As we say in Jewish, BVG, Besser wie Gornish, which means better than nothing. So if your kid is only going to take the vitamin if they're in a gummy form and they won't take them any other way, then that's what you have to do. Sometimes you'll have to take more gummies in a day. Then don't forget about your omega-3 fatty acids. They're important in brain and nerve cell function. So I take a lot of essential fatty acid every day. I take a good teaspoon and a half, 1 to 2 teaspoons of fish oil every day. And I take black cumin seed oil and I take MCT oil. But omega-3s are mostly that's what's in the omega-3 in the fish oil. And very important in brain and nerve cell function. It's part of the structure of the myelin sheaths, the covering of all of the nerves in your body. It's part of the cell membrane of every cell in your body, actually. And also it's part of the anti-inflammatory systems in your body. So your prostaglandin E1 and E3 series reduce inflammation in the body. And if you consume adequate essential fatty acids, you'll have adequate levels of those prostaglandins, those anti-inflammatory prostaglandins. So there was a study in Sweden that concluded that daily doses of omega-3s, which you can get in cold water fatty fish like sardines, tuna, and salmon, can reduce ADHD symptoms by 50%. And Dr. Sven Aslan followed a group of ADHD children, age 8 to 18, who took daily fish oil. Within 6 months, there was a notable decrease in ADHD symptoms in 25% of the children. I don't know if that's because it didn't work for the others because there's another mechanism, or they might have already been ADHD sufficient or omega-3 sufficient. Omega-3s do tend to break down readily in the bodies of patients than those who have ADHD than those without the condition. People with ADHD who have low blood levels of omega-3s will show the biggest improvement in mental focus and cognitive function. Sometimes the changes, that's why I said that the ones that it didn't work so well for, it may be because the patients were already omega-3 sufficient. So what should you avoid if you have ADHD? High sugar food and snacks. Some studies have found no correlation between refined sugar and hyperactivity. Other studies of nutrition suggest that some kids with ADHD are turned on by copious amounts of sweet stuff. There was a study at the University of South Carolina that showed that the more sugar hyperactive children consume, the more destructive and restless they became. If you have fluctuations in your blood sugar, even if it doesn't make you outright wild, fluctuations in your blood sugar, you're not going to feel well. It's going to affect your mood. It's going to affect your energy. And if you're a child, you might be more likely to act out. Fruit drinks and cocktails are higher in sugar than 100% fruit juice, so those are not great. Read your labels carefully and avoid high fructose corn sweetener, dehydrated cane juice, dextrin, dextrose, maltodextrin, sucrose, molasses, and malt syrup. Then there's artificial dyes and preservatives, which we talked about last week. There's studies in The Lancet, Pediatrics, the Journal of Pediatrics. Some children with ADHD are adversely affected by food additives. Those would be things like artificial coloring and flavors, such as also the preservative sodium benzoate, which even makes some kids without ADHD hyperactive. So colorful cereals, conventional cereals that you can get. If you get colorful cereals at the health food store, they may be colored with beet juice and carrots and beta carotene and annatto. Those are fine. But if they're colored with red dyes, like red dye number, red dye number 40 and yellow number 5 and green number 3, those are not a good idea. And a lot of fruit drinks are going to be colored with those things. So those are things you want to look at. So sugar is not good for people with ADHD. When you consume refined sugar and refined starches, when you consume carbohydrates, you need B vitamins and magnesium to metabolize them. And when you eat refined sugar and refined starches, they are depleted because they've been processed. They are depleted of refined sugar. They're depleted of magnesium and B vitamins. So then you're running at a deficit, because you're going to get it from somewhere else. You either have to get it from the supplements you're taking or from other foods that you have eaten. But if you eat a carbohydrate that has magnesium and B vitamins in it, so you're eating whole grain bread, you're eating whole grain sourdough, or you're eating quinoa, or you're eating nuts and seeds, they're going to have B vitamins and magnesium in them already. So any carbohydrates in them, you have assistance from the already existing B vitamins and magnesium. And yes, you can also take B vitamins and magnesium in supplement form. So I do both. I try to eat whole foods and I also happen to take the supplements. So I got a lot of stuff going on. So that's interesting. Eating a whole foods diet free of chemicals, and with as little refined sugar and starch as you can is going to help your ADHD improve. So there you go. All right, I just have a couple of more minutes. I'm just going to say keep an eye on the pollen counts outside. If you're somebody who has respiratory allergies, you might want to take a look at that. And you can find allergy counts. There are websites that will tell you the allergy count. And also, if you have a weather app on your phone, it probably will tell you the pollen counts. And if the pollen counts are higher, if there's some kind of medicine that you take, like I'm not thrilled about taking over-the-counter drugs for allergies because I found it's very helpful for people to clean their noses, use neti pots, or use xylitol nasal spray. And also to make sure you're eating a lot of fruits and vegetables. You're staying away from dairy because it increases mucus. And if you want to take some stuff, you can drink nettle tea. You can take nettle leaf in capsules. That helps with allergy symptoms. So does vitamin C. So does bromelain, which is pineapple enzyme. It helps to break down inflammatory compounds. So you can take those, and those can be helpful. I have patients who take combinations of those, and also patients who take combinations that have nettles, eyebright, horseradish and elder. And all of those can be helpful for keeping allergy symptoms at bay. So keep an eye on the allergies. Drink lots of water. Wash yourself when you come in from outside because you can get pollen on yourself and on your clothes, and throw everything in the wash, and you're going to tend to have less allergy symptoms that way. And then make sure you're eating really well. Do your omega-3s and eat fruits and vegetables, clean protein, nuts and seeds if you tolerate them, legumes if you tolerate them, and whole grains if you tolerate them. And watch your dairy because dairy can increase your mucus. So that's what I have to say today. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND, for 30 days after recording. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.